Welcome to podcast number 14 on membership value and retention. I'm Matt Till, a senior consultant at Prospectus, a not-for-profit consultancy agency recruiting fantastic individuals into the charity sector, which includes the arts, culture and heritage. I'm delighted to be joined by two of those people today, Claire Byfield, membership manager of the British Museum, and Eve Vines, the membership and appeals manager of City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra. Thank you so much for joining me today to discuss what I think is quite a really important and interesting issue within the arts and culture sector. I'm very grateful to be joined by Evie and Claire to discuss this topic on membership value and retention. So to start, I'd be quite keen to pass across to you both to get a bit of an introduction of who you are and where you come from. So I'll pass across to Claire first.
My name is Claire Byfield. I am the membership engagement manager at the British Museum. So essentially, it does what it says on the tin. My team does the membership events. We do membership emails, the British Museum magazine for both adults and children, mailings, basically anything that engages that audience comes under my remit.
And Evie?
Hi, my name's Eve Vines. I'm memberships and appeals manager. I joined the CBSO back in 2008 as development assistant. Got promoted into a role of individual opinion manager, and then a couple of years later left to join at Birmingham Hippodrome, where I managed their membership schemes, but then missed the CBSO so dramatically that I rejoined in 2014. I manage our membership scheme, so I look after around 1,500 members who give between £50 and £10,000. All of that contributes around about £500,000 to the organisation, which is around about a third of the development team's income overall. The appeal side of things, we run ad hoc appeals during the course of the year, so that's just about me organising those appeals, whether they're by email or by telephone.
Fantastic. Obviously the last year has been really challenging for a lot of organisations, especially within your sector. I don't want to dwell too much on that, but I do want to explore that a little bit more with you to start with, just to find out a little bit more about how you've engaged members through the past year or so, and how has your membership offering changed? So I thought I could start with you, Eve.
Yeah, sure. So, going back to the start of lockdown back in March, the first certainly few weeks, month and a half, was really about us cancelling everything that was in the diary. Our members had booked up events, we paid for them. We were in the planning stages of organising a tour for members to join us on a trip to Lucerne in Switzerland, which we tend to do every couple of years. So all of the work on that stopped. We've got events, a Royal Patron event that we've got in the diary. The invitations have actually been printed for that event. And we ended up obviously having to cancel all of that. And in the beginning, actually the communication between us and our membership was really regular, because nobody knew what was going on, and so we were communicating things every sort of couple of weeks, of keeping people up to date and abreast of what was happening. Obviously our concerts got cancelled, but we cancelled them in sort of 2 week batches, because we thought we might be back in June to perform whatever was in the diary. So actually it was crazy, but it felt very together, because our membership based they're the heart of our organisation, and they're the people that are the closest to us, and they were with us, they were absolutely wanting the best for us. And with our concert cancellations, anybody that purchased a ticket had an option of whether to donate that ticket value back to the organisation or to get a refund. And of our membership, the majority of people did donate that value back to the organisation because they wanted us to be okay. So then once we've gone through, all of that cancellation process, our first experience of a virtual event was towards the end of April. For our members that give us £1,000 or more, we run what we call circles links. So any evening concert over at Symphony Hall in Birmingham, we offer a glass of wine for them to come and join us in the foyer and have a glass of wine before the concert starts. And we decided in April that the concert wasn't happening, but we wanted to gather a social event anyway. And so anybody that had got a ticket for that concert were invited to our very first Zoom. I'd never heard of Zoom before, all of us, and none of us had we. And so we organised this the circles week at home in our living rooms, and it was terrifying but amazing at the same time. And really, it was just about us checking in with people, you know, seeing how they were, and actually really a personal thing. You know, it was at a time where people couldn't get their shopping delivered, so we were checking that, you know, their neighbours were looking after them, and just it was very much a social checking, how are you, how are you doing, and a bit of an update from our chief executive. So once we'd done that, once we decided actually it was a nice thing to do, so we rolled that out weekly, dividing up our sort of membership that gave that amount into sort of four groups, because we couldn't have too many people on screen at the same time. So we sort of rolled over the course of 2 months, we rolled through those members and invited them to join us on a Thursday evening. And then what happened next? The furlough scheme was introduced, and that then meant that we're lucky in that our orchestra members are all salaried musicians, so they were eligible to be furloughed. Obviously, they weren't playing in concert, so we furloughed everybody, which was a godsend for us in terms of the organisation's finances. But it was really difficult for our department and for our team, because we had no access to any of our musicians. And you know, by the rules of furlough, we're not allowed to even volunteer their time. So we found that really hard. You know, normally we would, I don't know, do a Q&A with the player, or just have a chat to them about how they're getting on, or they would want to record some music at home. They were doing loads of recordings at home, because musicians, it's innate that they want to perform. Just because they were stuck in their house didn't mean that they weren't playing. They were, but we as an organisation couldn't share that work with anybody because they were on furlough. So at the start of the summer, we ended up being sort of crafty and finding people who were connected to the organisation that weren't on furlough, and we ran three events with those people, webinars. And just, you know, try to provide something for our membership to come along to invite them to, and to just feel a little bit connected. One of them was an update with our chief exec, just simply, you know, what's going on, what's the state of play, and how are things going. And a couple of the others were with artistic people. And then once flexible furlough came in, that actually was really helpful. You know, once we were able to bring musicians off of furlough in order to deploy them onto a particular project, that then opened up all sorts of things. So one of the projects that I worked really closely with about half a dozen of our musicians was a ringing around project. So we literally just found members who were not digitally connected, because you know, we were still communicating with people who had emails, who were updating them on what was going on. But actually, a high proportion of our membership do not use email, do not have a computer. And so we hadn't spoken to them for such a long time. So I worked really closely with, like I say, about six musicians, gave them about 30 names, and they spent a week phoning people. And again, doing that pastoral thing of how are you, what are you up to, have you heard about this with the CBSA, do you know about this? And just using the musician's time to connect with our membership. And I think that went down really, really well, actually. I had quite a lot of feedback from people about how lovely it was to get a call from a viola player, and how unexpected it was as well, actually. So that was cool. And probably something that we might think about doing again in the future. It doesn't have to be a lockdown thing. And then the other project that we started towards the end of last year and has carried on was a series that we devised, which basically was just to make up for the fact that we weren't running these events. We took them online. We've done a series called Behind the Music, which initially was hosted by Alan Titchmarsh, who has been a very long supporter of the CBSO. We called him up and asked him if he fancied to be a host for this series. And he thankfully said yes, he would. So in January, we kickstarted the series. Actually, it was meant to be a monthly thing, but it ended up becoming weekly, because you know, January was just miserable, isn't it? And we just thought we need to give ourselves something to, just something to do, something to look forward to. So it became a weekly thing, 6 weeks with Alan, and then a member of the orchestra took over that hosting position. And this webinar series was, we spoke to different members of the orchestra from week to week about their hobbies off the platform, about what they, you know, what they were looking forward to getting back to. We did a session about, you know, how double bass players is making a double bass, so he showed us, you know, the ins and outs of how to make a double bass. We've done a session about the parallels between sport and music. And that series has really helped us just to provide something for our membership, to give them something that, you know, they can tune into, they can look forward to. But also just to keep connected with them and feel like, you know, we've not lost an entire year. We've moved forward, and actually our audience, our membership that tuned into these sessions actually know a little bit more about the players that are on platform and feel a little bit more connected to us as an organisation as a whole. So yeah, I mean, we do know that our membership isn't a benefits-led membership, thankfully. You know, that they really are there to support the organisation, and so that knowing that has been really helpful for the year, and stuck by us, and you know, we want to see the orchestra thrive. However, you know, I do feel obliged that we should be giving them something back in return. So yeah, this year really has been an interesting one. And I think where we're at now, where we've just started to perform concerts live again, I think we'll talk about this in a little bit more detail later on. But you know, there are some things that we've done this year that absolutely we need to keep delivering, and so that the look of our membership is going to change over the next few years based on, you know, what we've all just been through over the last 14 months. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And over to Claire.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's really interesting to hear how you've done a lot of that very personal side of things, which just sounds so good. And that's unfortunately something we find a lot harder, because obviously our members, we have about 70,000 of them, so trying to have that personal engagement is always a challenge, and it's something that I'd love to try and do some more. You've got some great ideas there, I'm going to steal some. When lockdown happened at the British Museum, first thing we actually did, because one of the things, obviously we paid a lot of attention to the other big national museums and what they're going to do, because often you try to sort of match, check you on the same wavelength. And it was really interesting for us to see that the Tate went straight out with extensions. I don't know if you recall, and they extended their membership. And that was really interesting for us. So we had to very quickly make the decision if we were going to do that or not. And we decided not to, because with the number of memberships we had, that was actually a huge amount of money we would have to give up monthly. However, doing that, we realised very quickly, if we're not extending and they haven't got the on-site benefits, we were really going to have to make sure we were offering alternative engagement options. So that's something we had to really ramp up really quickly with a large number of members. One of the big things, obviously, is we increased our communication. So we went up to weekly to sometimes twice a week emails. Firstly, letting them know what was happening, you know, when you'd be able to come back. As you pointed out, there's, you know, news was changing so quickly at the start, it was quite easy to give them that information. But we also swapped our emails around, because previously we'd been very, you know, this event's coming up, quite news focused, you know, letting them know what's happening at the museum. We switched it up to content focused emails, essentially. So very heavily on, well, we sort of did a mixture. So when the museum first shut, my team, bless them, with our phones on a gimbal, ran around the whole museum trying to get as much footage as possible of how we were closing down the museum. We did loads of stuff with the conservators and stuff behind the scenes, and admittedly, some of it was not our best work with, you know, because it's my team who are not expert filmmakers or anything, with our little mobile phones. But we realised very early on that didn't matter with the members. It was the content over the quality that they really enjoyed, and getting that behind the scenes access. So we did a whole load of this. We didn't put it all out at once. We sort of staggered it because we kind of assumed we'd need quite a lot. But we also mixed that up with a lot of archival stuff. So you'd create an email maybe on a certain gallery. We would have some brand new footage, which we could post as exclusive footage for our members, which was really appreciated, went down well. But then we'd mix that with some archival bits and pieces. And what I was noticing, because our members' demographic, they are that older, they're less tech savvy, shall we say. A lot of the digital stuff previously we've done in the museum, they've never experienced, they've never really been engaged with, shall we say. So it was, they were seeing it for the first time, and this was actually a really useful resource for us. So it let us spread out what we call that exclusive content and mix it up. But essentially, you were serving a gallery on a platter of all this context and information. So that's how we started with that level of engagement. We got really positive feedback from the members about that, particularly people who were further away in general and had, you know, don't visit the museum as often. They were saying they actually felt they were getting better benefits, which was ironic. We then started putting into place the live streaming events. So it took us a little while just to make sure we had that process correctly, because obviously we were doing it with the webinar format with X number of people attending. We took the decision to run those for free. I know there were a lot of other museums who decided to charge for them. The reason we opted for that is because we viewed the income from the membership retention was far more valuable to us than the potential income from maybe charging £5 a ticket for a live streamed event. Because, you know, when we balance it out, it's, I suspect, different for orchestras and things where the performance element is the key aspect. But for us, normally you'd be able to get into the exhibition and things for free. So we balanced that with, instead of being able to go and see your exhibition, we will be offering you these series of free lectures, which again went down really well. I was going to say, one of the benefits of lockdown has been the fact we have a whole audience who are not tech savvy, have suddenly been educated in Zoom, which a lot of these ideas about live streaming events and bits and pieces is things that have been sort of bubbling in the background for quite a while in our industry, but you've always been sort of, we have to introduce it very gradually to an audience who perhaps aren't as open to it. So it's sort of fast forwarded a lot of plans that I found really interesting. But yes, the live events went down really well. We had a lot of attention. We had a challenge again when all our curators went off furlough in the same way. It was suddenly like, oh, there goes our stock of experts. But what we ended up doing was going out to a lot of publishing companies, speaking to authors and things who perhaps wanted to promote books and things who couldn't do the live lecture. So we were doing it through those ways. And the other really interesting aspect, and that's something we will be continuing, is we were able to actually get people from across the globe, which particularly for our collection, we are an international collection. There's often a lot of controversy that goes with that. And one of the challenges is a lot of speakers, you know, it's the British Museum, but we still are not swimming in money, alas. We can't always afford to bring those speakers from across the globe, but this actually allowed us to do that. We could have speakers who were from the countries and origins of those collections talking about them, which I think was something perhaps lacking before, but we've really been able to pick up on. And I think that's gone down extremely well, actually having, you know, the appropriate voices speaking about the collection. So that's been really precious. The other things we've done, so again, lots and lots of digital activity. We've also got a sizable portion of members who are not tech savvy at all and have no email addresses. So we've probably got maybe 2,000 to 3,000 members without email addresses, so for them, what we have to do is increase our mailings. And we also created a printed newsletter which we got people to write articles, conservators, and about interesting, strange projects and things that perhaps we wouldn't talk about in our main magazine, which obviously we were still sending out and producing. I have to say our editor did an amazing job creating a magazine with nearly all the curators on furlough. No idea how she achieved such a thing. But it allowed us to do maybe, you know, those smaller, more unusual articles. And again, we saw a real interest for that, because what we noticed again from members, et cetera, is that it was these less well-known things that they felt was something extra special, something a little bit different and unique, which again was nice. The free digital event program has also allowed us to, shall we say, test subjects and things that if we were doing an on-site big lecture where we're charging, you know, you often go for the safe subject because it's, there's always an element of income generation needed to support an institution, etc. But when it's going to be free anyway, you think, okay, let's test this subject and see what the uptake is. And that's allowed us to test a lot of things that we think, okay, let's try that again later in a paid setting, because what, now we know there's an appetite for it, or actually they didn't like that at all, let's not go down that route again. So, you know, as much as you can say in COVID there's opportunities, it has allowed us to test a lot of the things, engage the audience appetites for lots of different subjects and things like that, which has been incredibly useful.
Fantastic. That's, yeah, it's really interesting. I think obviously the opportunities that COVID has presented, but I think that, you know, maybe some organizations have seen it as a means to an end to get through this period. So I kind of wanted to ask a little bit more about what the future holds. I think what's really interesting recently is the artistic director of the Young Vic said that all future productions will be live streamed. So I wanted to kind of ask you a little bit more about, you know, is this something you're thinking about continuing to do? Is it something that you're, you know, these opportunities you've seen, you think, great, this is something we can continue to do post-COVID? Or do you feel there's an appetite for it? So I'll start with you, Claire.
Yeah, absolutely. The feedback we've had over lockdown has been virtually 100%. You know, they want to get back to the museum, but they want things to continue, which obviously is a challenge, because doing a lot of all this content and everything during lockdown has taken the same resources. So none of our team in the membership, et cetera, were furloughed because we were still working with all these members. But now having to resource that and everything we were doing before, all the on-site activities, we've suddenly got a much larger workload. So what we're looking at the moment is how we're going to resource this going forward and, you know, redirecting funding to digital aspects, et cetera. So we are going to be creating all our lectures, et cetera, will be live streamed. Those will have a charge to them now. When we open up again, we will introduce that aspect. We are going to also, though, keep a small selection of free, which will be digital only. So if it's an on-site, you'd have a live stream element, and then we would have a what we call digital only strand, which again will be that free element, but also that element, those less well spoken about subjects, or, you know, new curators who want to speak about some new work, etc. That's an opportunity for us. Like I say, the other big thing is getting those speakers from across the world will now be integrated into that program going forward, and that's something that's really important to us. We are also creating a digital archive on the website, so there's essentially, there'll be an exclusive content section for members, which will be an archive of all these live streamed events, all this exclusive content that we've been creating. We also, during lockdown, we digitalised our entire back catalogue of the British Museum magazine, which was quite fun. It's great to see how curators who've been here a long time have aged over the years in the magazine. But again, that's a big resource, which is going to be online. So there's this whole online element. And we are at the stage where we can promote this as a membership benefit as well. So it's not just, you know, our standard benefits, exhibitions, discounts in shops, all these things. We can now say you will get exclusive content. You will get access to the whole digital archive of the magazine. You will get behind the scenes access. So it's increased the benefit of membership. there was a lot of talk sort of midway through lockdown if we wanted to investigate digital only memberships, for instance, maybe for international members. But we actually opted not to do this because when we had a think about it, we realised actually throughout lockdown, we actually had really good retention and we had members who were essentially willing to pay for what was a digital membership at the time, but full price, if you see what I mean. They were paying their full membership fee and hence the value of that digital aspect is the equivalent. What we didn't want to do is risk diluting our standard membership offering by offering the two levels. So we have opted just to keep the main standard membership. And essentially, we are hoping and we have been increasing our international membership and essentially just adding benefit to that. So people who are further afield that maybe visit the museum a little bit, but support us, you know, philanthropically because they love the institution, everything, and now just getting a much higher benefit and engagement, which is, you know, really important to us. But yeah, essentially the biggest challenge we have now is resourcing this going forward so that we are making sure we're doing everything in lockdown and everything we were doing before lockdown, which is essentially the biggest challenge for the team. So sort of behind the scenes, there is a sort of bit of restructuring, rethinking, trying to work out, you know, what our email strands are going to go forward in, different levels of events, etc. But I think we have a solid plan. And I have to say, just from an engagement point of view, it's opened up a lot of avenues, which, again, it's just me, the hospital, but I find a lot of fun. You know, you can play a lot, you can experiment a bit, and you can really try things out that you may have said beforehand, we're going to have to try this very gently over the next 5 years because of the conservative nature of our audiences. But actually, you've been like, right, we've got to get it done really quickly. Things have moved a lot faster in lockdown than they'd ever normally move in this industry, due to need, obviously. But it has allowed us to do a lot of things very quickly. And I think at the end will be of huge benefit to this industry and move us forward to the level of perhaps you'd say sort of more commercial type industries and structures, to a point we should be. So, you know, there are some benefits.
Thank you so much. I'm really interested in obviously that piloting and that opportunity it creates for you to test things out. I think that's really fascinating and obviously could present some really exciting things in the future for the museum. You touched upon this a little bit earlier, Eve, obviously that you've been doing things that you kind of want to continue to do, but I suppose putting the question back, you know, to you is, you know, what are you going to continue doing? What does it look like for you in the future in terms of that membership engagement and that value, really?
Yeah, I think exactly as Claire's just said, you know, I think that there are some things that we've been forced to do through lockdown that we would never have planned to have done in normal times. So the digital aspect is definitely part of that. We and the work in that area has just accelerated. It's absolutely, you know, the orchestra were allowed to start rehearsing behind closed doors from back in November time. And so they've been, every week they've been recording a new concert. And we've put this series of concerts up online. I think now that we've done that digital work, I think that there's no going back. You know, that is essentially the future. However, there's also no replacing people being in a room with live musicians and going and watching music live. And so I think the future for us is really trying to find this sort of hybrid approach of, you know, you can't replicate a concert hall on a computer, you just can't. But there are elements of what we do that we can deliver digitally that will benefit our membership. And so this series behind music, absolutely, we need to look at how that continues. I think a hybrid version of that event is probably what we'll look at, whether we can, I don't know how fancy we can get with this, but whether we can actually film, have a live event but also film it and stream it back to people who are at home and not able to come into that, into the space physically. At the moment, because we've opened our doors and because we are presenting concerts to live audiences, social distancing, we have seen some of our membership desperate to get back to concerts. You know, they would have given their right arm to be sitting in the concert hall 6 months ago, and now they're allowed to, they're absolutely there. But we've also seen a proportion of our audience that are really nervous about coming back and don't feel ready to do that. And so we absolutely need to be continuing the series that is behind the music series for our members. Initially, from January through to June, it was weekly. We scaled it back, we're now running it monthly, just so that, you know, while we're now presenting live music, you know, like Claire says, there's only so many people doing what we're doing and there's only so many hours in the day. And so we've had to kind of compromise on that a little bit. But we are still able to deliver something to people who don't feel comfortable yet coming back into our concert space. I think the other thing, the thing that was really sad about 2020 for the CBSO was that it was our centenary year. So our 100th birthday was back in September. And the plans that we had got clearly didn't happen. But we were not letting that happen, you know, that date go by without us celebrating it. So actually what ended up taking place was incredible. We put all of our music teams, all 90 of them, into a warehouse in Longbridge on the outskirts of Birmingham, at social distance, at 2 metres social distance, and using binoculars from the back of the orchestra to see the conductor at the other side of this warehouse. And we live streamed a concert that celebrated the orchestra, its history and its future. And that evening we also kick-started a £12.5 million fundraising campaign as well. That concert was, as I say, live streamed on Facebook and on YouTube and was available for a month for people to view. And it was seen 180,000 times globally. So, you know, that's, if we'd done that concert at Symphony Hall, about 4,500 people would have seen that performance. But, you know, the opportunities are absolutely huge. And I think, yes, it's accelerated what we've done. There was a huge amount of manpower that went into presenting that concert. It was completely, we've never done a live stream before, not at that scale. There were huge learnings that the organisation took on. And I think that now we feel like we're in a different place now, actually, that we can embrace new and different things. What they quite look like going forward, I'm not quite sure. But I think we've turned a corner and digital is absolutely here to stay. But it's really very much about creating a hybrid approach and making sure that we continue, you know, servicing our members and our audience in a traditional way, because essentially, you know, live music can't be the
best. Thank you so much. I mean, yeah, that's fascinating. And I think, again, as I said just before you started, I think the opportunities that digital create is really fascinating. Obviously, offering a slightly different angle on things you can do, creating opportunities for you to do things that you might not be able to do in person, as much as in person is always the preferred, you know, version. I think it does create lots of creative ways to engage people with something slightly different, something, you know, that's a little bit unusual, a little bit different. I know that one of the biggest challenges across organisations like yours is that phase between commerciality and member interest. And I wanted to kind of explore that with you, because, you know, you've been closed for a year, you want to get people in, you want people engaged with the work that you're doing. Obviously, the members are going to be really engaged to come in, but you wanted to obviously create buzz, create income and put things on. How are you kind of, you know, towing that line, I suppose, by putting on things that the general public would be particularly engaged with, particularly interested in, and something that would be a bit more traditional with what your members would be, you know, more in line with. So I wanted to start off with Eve on that question.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest, we could present anything, because, like I say, the people that want to be back in the concert hall would listen to, they don't care what we're performing, you know, they just want to be back in the concert hall and listening to a live orchestra perform again. So in a way, actually, that's that's been really helpful. And I think that the concerts that at the moment, so we opened on the 19th of May for an 8-week series, mini series, a concert, two concerts every Wednesday, an afternoon and evening performance every week. Mostly because of getting people into the country, mostly our conductors and our artists are British or live in the UK, so they can get to Birmingham. And actually the concerts are, in order for our audience not to circulate, there's no interval at the moment. So they're 75 minute concerts, so slightly shorter than normal, straight through. And that's actually giving us an opportunity to, you know, it's not a traditional performance, it's not a traditional concert in the sense of, you know, ages, concerto, symphony in the second half. That's really exciting, that's really interesting. We're programming music that we wouldn't normally program. And because people have missed us so much, they are listening to it and coming back, and, you know, that the stage looks different. From a very practical point of view, the players, the musicians, they would normally be dressed in tails. They can't dress in tails because there's no changing facilities for them backstage. So they're presenting in all black because they couldn't, you know, walk in or drive in their concert attire. That's, you know, that looks different to our audience. That's something new. We are also doing a bit of an exercise, a bit of a trial of asking our conductors and soloists to talk from the stage. The first couple of concerts, I mean, we couldn't shut them up actually, because they're so pleased to be back performing live again. They just got on the top in front of the stage and just was like, I'm so pleased to be here, thank you. And so it was, you know, our concerts at the moment do look slightly different. And like Claire said, that's actually, it's really nice to try on new things and to test them out. And what we're using our membership for now is to see what the reaction to that is, and do they like it? Are they interested in hearing from the conductor before the piece starts? Or do they prefer the very traditional, you know, come on, take a bow, start the performance? And I think that, you know, it's a learning curve right now, and we'll see what bits stay and what bits go. All of our programmes are digital, which means that people can have their phones in the auditorium and can scroll through the concert programmes on their phones. All of their concert tickets are digital, and it's just, it's for our audience, there is a very traditional audience. This is like, you know, everything's been blown out of the water, really. So we are forced to be trialling new things, and I think that the takeaways will be, you know, what are the best things out of it, we'll keep those, and what are the things that people would rather we didn't do, we'll get rid of that. But, you know, in terms of commerciality, I think the people that want to be back will listen to anything, so we're very lucky in that respect.
I think obviously COVID's had that restriction and you've had to be creative, but coming back into that physical space, there's still an element of restriction, and I do think that is really interesting how you can be quite creative in that format of a more shorter piece. How about yourself, Claire?
So the main sort of big recruitment and things at the museum is our exhibition program, and our exhibition program is always, we always try to have a mixture, because we technically meant to be covering every culture in the world. So we are always trying what we call maybe a more traditional show-stopping exhibition. So currently we have Nero, Emperor Nero, Romans, nice and classic, very popular. But over lockdown, for instance, we had Arctic, which is a very different style of exhibition for the British Museum, looking at the culture and how it's affected by climate change and things up in the Arctic. And for us, it's always a challenge with the varying exhibitions. It's very easy for us when we have what we call core exhibitions, which resonates, you know, Romans, Egyptians, anything like that, you sort of associate the British Museum. It's very easy to recruit members and engage those members. Whereas something like Arctic, or we had an exhibition on Tantra, for instance, it's more challenging. So you may get people becoming a member to access that exhibition, which is great. How we retain those members is always a bit more of a challenge. because they may not be what you call our traditional members. So the digital program has actually opened some opportunities there for us. So whereas a lot of our on-site events, you're focused on, you know, tours of the exhibition, early morning views, all this sort of stuff, we are then using a bit of our digital programming to connect that exhibition to the permanent collection. So if you joined for a few ages ago, we had Manga, or if you joined for Tantra, they may do some digital tours or some digital talks on the relevant permanent collections, i.e. India, Southeast Asia, etc., like that, to try and say, if you joined for this amazing exhibition, do you realise we also have an amazing permanent collection? So I think a lot of people don't quite realise that actually the real jewels of the collection are always on display. So it's using that. And so, you know, we know if you joined at this time, we can track if you visited the exhibition, we can then serve you that content which we see specifically is relevant to you. And it's allowed us, particularly one of the benefits of lockdown, for tracking point of view, has been obviously ticketing. We've had to ticket exhibitions for members, which we would never normally do. Normally they could just walk straight in, but it means we can really identify who's attended what and things, and then we can really target our comms accordingly to try and engage that audience with the relevant collections that we think will retain their membership. It doesn't always work, don't get me wrong, but we are sort of improving that offering, I think, and making it a little bit more bespoke and trying to, like, always bring back to that permanent collection, which is really, you know, jewel in our crown, so to speak.
Can I just ask, do you think that the ticketing thing will stay? You know, you're obviously having to do that because of their track and trace, I presume. But do you think that that's something that you're keeping?
I think it's going to have to stay while track and trace stays, and that's one of the big issues is if you have people just walking in, which obviously Visual Museum traditionally always has, is getting people to track and trace slows the whole process down. You can only get so many people in. So to prevent lots of queuing and overcrowding, we probably will. Long term, however, I think particularly for members, one of the benefits is being able to walk straight in whenever you want. And that's something we very much want to go back to, because I think it is a key member benefit. We had just a few years also introduced a scanning your card, so we could track what they were visiting and things when they remembered to scan their cards. But interesting now, I think because of the ticketing, we've sort of mentally implemented all these sort of strategies on how to, you know, before you visit, if you've booked, we will issue you, this is some great content about this exhibition, this is a bit of a blog, this is a tour, so you can read up on it before you go as a member. After your visit, we can send you an email saying, you know, did you like it? Oh, by the way, these are the next events on this exhibition. So I think, whereas before we sort of had that information about their coming and we were so focused on getting them in and everything, now I will take a look at that information and think, right, how can I use that more effectively, because it's worked so well with that ticketing model. Obviously, you know, for the big exhibitions, the paying tickets were always ticketed, of course, but members never were. So I think we'd like to go back to members not being ticketed, because I think it is a huge benefit. But we will still be really paying attention to when they're visiting, what they're visiting, and how we can address that content to improve that visiting experience. The idea is, as a member, you're no longer just turning up to see the exhibition you're getting for free whoopee. It's, I am turning up, but I have also been issued this whole range of curatorial information on the silver platter, which will enhance my experience. So our whole membership scheme, we're trying to transform almost to, it is a curated view of the museum. You know, we will try and ensure you are getting the best information, the best access to objects and knowledge. The membership is not just access to a collection, it is access to the knowledge and expertise behind the collection. And I think that is really valuable for our members. It is that extra layer, rather than just what you call a financial value-based membership, as in it saves you money to visit this, it is more a context, content-based membership, you know, a knowledge-based membership, I suppose. I'm sure there's a better word for this, but I can't think of it right off the top of my head. But I think we are moving to that model, which I think is very beneficial. I think actually allows for better retention, because you're no longer just saying, I'm saving money, but am I interested in next year? Am I going to save money next year? It's like, actually, this is giving me value for the whole collection, so it is worth staying a member. So sort of, I'm not saying it works 100% of the time, but that's what we're gradually trying to move to, which I think is really working well for our retention element. The other interesting thing about lockdown and sort of retention and membership and things and recruiting members, of course, you know, for the exhibitions and things, we've always done things like an early morning view or a late night view just for members, which basically offers a quieter period to visit these exhibitions. And suddenly that's become very valuable. You don't want to visit in a really busy period. You'd like to visit in a quieter period. And it's like membership will give you that opportunity, which is really useful. But saying that, you know, the exclusive content things we've been doing for members, we are also aware that it is important, you know, the museum is meant to be sharing culture with the world, regardless of whether you've paid your membership fee or not. So what we have been doing is the content and things we've been creating for members, we have been editing it down into shorter versions so that obviously the members are getting exclusive elements, etc. But then maybe a few months later, we will send that out to the public. And that has the double benefit of, firstly, you know, making sure we're sharing exciting content with everyone, because that's important. That's part of our purpose as a museum. And it does have that lovely subtle reminder that as a member, you would have got this a few months ago and a slightly longer form video. So again, that's just helping. Again, it's not massively a recruitment tool as such. The main recruitment drive is always that exhibition program, getting into that exhibition program. But all of this added together is a massive retention, and retention is worth so much. It's, you know, when you look at it financially, how much money you spend recruiting a new member compared to how much money you spend retaining a member, retention is always far more valuable. I mean, traditionally we may have an 89 to 90% retention rate, which is really valuable for us. In lockdown, we've probably been about 86, 87% retention. So to be honest, I've been delighted with that, because I thought it was going to go down a lot more, trust me. I was pleasantly surprised by the philanthropic nature of the members. But like I say, it has changed our view on what is the purpose of being a member and moving it away from purely exhibition finance based, etc., to try and just make it a more, you know, valuable curator product, as it were.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, the value obviously in that, I do think that future looks really bright in terms of you know, all that new content and enriching the experience of both your institutions. It's something that I think is obviously, well, the members enjoy it, which is good. That's something that's a really good value moving forwards. It's been really amazing to hear what you two have said about what you've been doing within your organisations. But we obviously know that there's been, you know, so many different organisations out there trying new things and trying different things. So I just wanted to see if you'd seen anything out there, any other organisations that have done anything that you were particularly impressed with or something you thought was really inspiring. Also, I wanted to start with Claire on that one.
I suppose one of the things that I found really lovely is a lot of institutions have been sort of showcasing their empty space. I know it sounds a weird thing, but I think particularly nationals, they're so busy and crowded, you forget how beautiful these spaces are. You know, both the buildings, both the collections, when there's nobody there. And I think the V&A and the Natural History, they've all done these lovely things where they've perhaps had live music in that space with beautiful lighting, and it's been atmospheric and gorgeous. And it's one of the things I think, oh gosh, I wish I was there, but equally thinking, yes, but if I was there, it wouldn't be so atmospheric and gorgeous. We actually stole the idea for Christmas. One of the V&A, I was like, right, I'm having that. And we've had some beautiful choral singers in our great court space when it was empty and echoing, and it was absolutely beautiful. And like I said, I'd love to say it was an original idea. It wasn't. But, you know, a lot of places have been utilising that. I've seen some, you know, perhaps have a gallery lit by candles, which you'd never be able to do with the public in there, which has been really interesting. So I think it's sort of allowed you to see spaces in a really unique and special way. You know, it's something I have the privilege of working at the museum. One of the things we also run is the children's sleepovers, which sleepover is a ridiculous word for them. No one ever sleeps. It's a trauma of my life. But once you get all the kids theoretically in the galleries sleeping, I love walking around a museum at night. I've always considered one of the perks of working in a museum, having it to yourself. And I think it's lovely how actually loads, you know, that experience can be shared with thousands of people now, because it is something really unique and special.
Oh, thank you so much. Fantastic. Eve, anything you'd like to add on that?
Yeah, I think very much from a personal point of view, I have been really impressed by mostly kind of sole business people that it's just them, their only outfit, and how they've been able to just completely get themselves online, get themselves presenting stuff on Facebook Lives or on other kind of channels where people have been able to present. For me, I'm a mum, I've got a little girl, she's two now, we're going into lockdown, she was one, and all of a sudden, all of the baby groups instantly were online. I know it's not quite, you know, our sector, but just, I was amazed at how agile people were, how creative people were in going, well, I can't go to this village hall and see all of these mums and toddlers together, but we're going to come together and we're going to do this, and we actually ended up tuning into a regular weekly baby group, toddler group that my sister and her little girl go to. They live on the South Coast. And for us to then join in this group together, and we couldn't see each other because our cameras weren't on, but we could, you know, we could type and we could say hello to each other. And for those cousins to be able to connect in that way, they would never have gone to those classes together in normal times. And so mostly for me, it was... you know, just seeing how people could be creative and become their own masters at whatever they did, and you know, we supported them wholeheartedly. So yeah, a bit different, but it's what kept us going, those baby classes.
I completely agree. I think ultimately, out of all of this, you know, regardless of sector, there seems to be a sense of duty. You know, we need to do this for our members, or we need to do this for the parents, or we need to do this for the children. And I think that's something that's been, you know, that's the thing that's really been the drive with a lot of this stuff. And you know, in terms of, you know, I think it's been really fascinating talking to both of you about what you're doing. I'm really, really excited about seeing how things have changed and how things are going to be moving forwards. And I suppose that leads into my final question, really, is, you know, I think, you know, there's been a lot of time, people haven't been coming to the museum. You know, people finally can come to the museum. What is the hot ticket item over the next 12 months for you? What's the thing you're most excited about people coming to see, really? So I thought we could start with Eve on that one.
Yeah, this is a really difficult question for me to answer, actually, because we've got this concert running up until July, but we actually haven't put on sale our main season from September onwards yet. So watch this space in terms of the CBSO. Everything, you're going to want to come to everything, mainly because it's basically 2020 plus one for us. You know, it's going to be our centenary year, it's going to be the centenary year that we've missed. We're reprogramming much of the highlights that we were planning on performing last year, but with just so much more emotion because we're finally going to be able to do it. So, yeah, for us, concerts, the season will resume from September. Hopefully at normal seating, you know, hopefully we won't have to social distance. At the moment, a 2,000 seater hall has been reduced down to 630 people. So hopefully that from September onwards won't be there, and we'll be able to get back to, you know, performing live music to full sold out concert halls. And I think for me, you know, I just returned from maternity leave when lockdown started. I am desperate to take my little girl to the concert. So for me, the family concerts and the music for, you know, young people is really important. I want to get her back to seeing, actually my husband is in the orchestra. I want her to see her daddy perform on stage. And you know, that's where the future of music is, isn't it, in our young people. So let's get them, they've had a tough year, let's get them back into watching art of all forms and inspiring them.
Wonderful, thanks so much. And Claire?
For me, it's the Thomas Beckett exhibition we've got happening at the moment. And I think it was a weird one for me because I'm from Canterbury, so I know Thomas Beckett very well and Canterbury Cathedral. I love it. And I was really confused when they said they were going to have the stained glass windows in the exhibition, because in my mind, I was like, why would you want to see it in a museum gallery when you can see it in the stunning Canterbury Cathedral, which is absolutely breathtaking. But when I saw it, what I realised, and this is what makes this exhibition so special for me, whereas at the cathedral, their windows I've seen 100 times, but they're 20, 30 foot up. Hmm. They're beautiful, but I realised I've never really seen them before. In the exhibition, you're up close, you literally get this close to them. And the detailing on these, you know, they're medieval. They're not like Victorian reworks. They're the actual Beckett windows. It's breathtaking. I had no idea of the detailing on them and things. And I have to say, I'm a history nerd, obviously. to me, that was really special because it's things that I have grown up with throughout my childhood and seen, but apparently never really seen at all. And yeah, to me, that's a beautiful... I mean, Nero is also good, but Beckett, I absolutely love, I have to say. I need to get back there regularly. And if they'd let me sit and eat my lunch in front of the windows, I would, but I'm not allowed to, alas.
Perfect. Well, I'm really excited to come and see both of those. And I just wanted to say thank you, Tara. I'm incredibly grateful I am for you taking the time to speak to me about this. This topic, I think, is really interesting. And I'm keen to be speaking to other people in the sector as well about this topic and find out what other organisations have been doing as well. So yeah, thank you again, and it's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you. It's been good fun.